Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Welcome to Africa Link. I am Abubakar Jallo, live from Bonn in Germany. Coming up, one of the girls kidnapped in Chibok, Nigeria 2 years ago has been found and reunited with her family.
We feel very happy. It is an indication that the girls are alive. We are optimistic that one day the girls will return to their parents.
In Kenya, supporters of the opposition Quad Coalition Party say they will continue their weekly protest until the Electoral Commission is disbanded. Last Monday's protest turned violent when the police intervened using tear gas and water cannon to disperse the crowd.
We are not guilty of anything, so we rather go to jail to protest our innocence. Those who are demonstrating on the wrong street, they are banging on the wrong door.
Plus, women MPs in Zimbabwe sit on the floor to seek help for women stranded overseas. Hope you'd stick around for these stories in the next 25 minutes.
Top story.
We begin in Nigeria, where the army has confirmed that one of the girls kidnapped from the town of Chibok has been rescued alongside a four-month-old baby. Her name is Amina Ali and not Falmata Ambalala, as earlier reported. The military further confirmed a suspected Boko Haram terrorist called Mohammed Hayatu, who claimed to be the girl's husband, was arrested. She is the first girl to be rescued since the militant group Boko Haram abducted more than 200 schoolgirls from Chibok in northeastern Nigeria in 2014. Amina Ali was only 17 at the time of her abduction, and according to Mohammed Alamin, DW's correspondent in northeastern Nigeria, residents of Chibok were overjoyed to learn about the discovery.
The Chibok community in Borno State is elated after the first of 219 schoolgirls abducted by Boko Haram from northeastern Nigeria more than 2 years ago has been found. The director of the Army Public Relations, Colonel Sani Usman, in a short statement claimed that the girl was one of the hostages rescued recently by the Nigerian troops near Dambua in Borno State. Several reports claimed that vigilantes from Chibok on patrol on Tuesday found Amina Ali breastfeeding a child in the Sambisa forest. Yakubu Nkeki, head of the abducted girl's parents' group, confirmed the name of the girl as Amina Ali and said she was 17 when she was abducted.
Her name is Amina Ali, my neighbor's daughter, and her father died after she was abducted by the insurgents. This is the first time we've heard of the rescue of one of the Chibok girls. I'm appealing to the Nigerian government to put more effort so that the parents would feel better in their hearts.
Women rights activist Hadiza Muazu called on the Nigerian government to intensify efforts to rescue not only the remaining girls, but all other people abducted by Boko Haram.
We feel very happy. It is an indication that the girls are alive. We are optimistic that one day the girls will return to their parents. We are calling on the government to redouble its efforts in rescuing not only the remaining girls, but all other people abducted by Boko Haram. We understand the military are doing their best, but we want them to do more.
It is believed that other kidnapped girls are in the same forest where the girl was found, which the military has been searching for several weeks.
Mohammed Alamin reporting from northeastern Nigeria. Supporters of Kenya's opposition coalition Quad have vowed to continue protesting, demanding the dissolution of the country's electoral commission. This comes after several people were injured on Monday when anti-riot police violently suppressed an opposition demonstration. The police brutality, which was caught on camera, was condemned globally. Now, as Andrew Wasike reports from Nairobi, the political standoff is nowhere from being resolved.
The political impasse in Kenya shows no signs of abating as both sides of the political divide dig deeper into their positions regarding the future of the Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission, IEBC. Following Monday's protests against IEBC that were brutally quashed by anti-riot police, the ruling Jubilee coalition has ruled out dissolving the IEBC. On the other hand, Kenyan opposition leader Raila Odinga has vowed that his supporters will demonstrate until their grievances are met.
If the Jubilee government is ready for dialogue, then we are ready to talk to them. But as my colleague said, our demonstrations will be held on every Monday until the Jubilee government is ready to talk to us.
Martha Karua, one of the leaders of the opposition in Kenya, also voiced the same sentiments as Mr. Odinga, saying that the protests will not stop until the government of Kenya calls for talks with the opposition.
We await for their communication when they see the other side. When something is on the table, then a response will be given.
The opposition accuses the IEBC of being biased and are demanding an overhaul of the electoral body, which is charged with organizing next year's elections. However, the chairman of the IEBC, Isaac Hassan, says his commissioners will stay put and will not take a dignified exit, as suggested by the leader of opposition, Raila Odinga. He said that resigning from office will justify allegations leveled against them by the opposition.
No amount of intimidation, you cannot insult us out of office. We are not guilty of anything. So we rather go to jail to protest our innocence. Those who are demonstrating on the wrong street, they are banging on the wrong door.
Concerned Kenyans have turned to social media platforms calling for an end to the protests, which they say are hurting the Kenyan economy by scaring off investors. Angry Kenyans also condemned the use of excessive force by police officers when dispersing protesters. This comes as a video clip made rounds on social media showing three police officers clobbering an opposition supporter who seemed to be unconscious. The clergy in Kenya, led by Bishop Cornelius Korir, have called on COD to end the protest, saying that they are willing to mediate talks between the government and the opposition.
And we are asking everybody to pray for the country and pray that a solution may be found than violence. And it's not the church is looking for a solution through dialogue.
15 suspects who were arrested during the Monday protests have been charged in court with being at a public place, armed and disturbing the peace. The protests have been gaining numbers as each Monday passes.
Andrew Wasike in Nairobi, and this is DW's Africa Link with me, Abubakar Jalo. Still to come, Zimbabwean female MPs sit for stranded women overseas.
Africa Link. Every weekday on DW Deutsche Welle.
Now, a survey by Amnesty International has shown that more people are likely to welcome refugees in their home countries. Among the African countries surveyed were Nigeria, Ghana, Kenya, and South Africa. In Nigeria, 85% of the respondents said people should take in and help refugees escaping war or persecution. The Refugee Welcome Index is the first of its kind to be carried out and ranks countries based on people's willingness to accept refugees into their countries, towns, neighborhoods, and homes. For more on the survey, Africa Link's Fred Muvunyi spoke to Victor Nyamori, a refugee officer for Amnesty International in Nairobi.
The results were very shocking. I mean, if you look at the survey welcome number, the highest country in Africa that was willing and able to welcome refugees more is Nigeria at a number of 41. The next country is Kenya, and right down, and actually South Africa also is higher, it's before Nigeria. So the first country is South Africa, Nigeria, then Kenya.
And in your report, you said that 1 in 10 people would let refugees stay in their homes, 3 in 10 in their neighborhood, and in general, 80% would welcome refugees with open arms. If your research is accurate, why have we seen some countries turning away refugees?
People feel strong for their fellow human. If a refugee is running away from their country and needs to be protected, then there's the human feeling that we are feeling. However, very, very few individuals have issues with the welcome index. If you look at Kenya, about 62% are calling on their states to do more in the protection of refugees. But you look at the few number of individuals and the politicians are pushing an agenda of negative rhetorics about refugees, which is not right.
You have talked about South Africa, and I was wondering, South Africa and Zambia, we have seen xenophobic behaviors. What did your research discover about these two countries?
Well, in terms of South Africa, I mean, we noted that about 24% were strongly agreeing to the effect that people, that their country need to do more to protect refugees who are seeking war and persecution. We also noted that about 41% somewhat agree with the government. But unfortunately, the few, about 16%, strongly disagree to the effect that their country should be able to welcome refugees.
And again, last week, the Kenyan government announced a plan to close refugee centers, including the world's largest refugee camp, Dadaab, citing security concerns. How much did the issue of security or insecurity as a result of refugees come up in your research?
Our research was able to find otherwise, because as much as people are welcoming refugees, then the rhetoric that the government is spinning is not true. People are welcoming refugees more, and the government is spinning the issue of security, and yet they lack evidence to the effect that refugees are a security risk.
Victor Nyamori, a refugee officer for Amnesty International in Nairobi. Now, Zimbabwean female MPs are celebrating a major milestone to end human trafficking. This comes after President Robert Mugabe's government agreed to facilitate the return of 200 women who were trafficked to Kuwait and have been stranded at the Zimbabwean embassy there since March. Since the beginning of this week, the female MPs decided to attend parliamentary sessions, but instead of sitting on the normal seat, they chose to sit on the floor in protest of government's failure to facilitate the return of the stranded women. The women left the country after being promised lucrative jobs in oil-rich Kuwait, but upon their arrival, they were stripped of their belongings, including travel documents, and sent to people who run brothels. From Harare, Columbus Mavunga filed this report.
MPs are taking their seats in Zimbabwe's parliament on Wednesday. This is the first time female MPs are joining in this week. On Tuesday, they had spent the whole session sitting on the floor. One of them is Beata Nyamupinga, the chairperson of the Gender and Women Affairs Committee. She told DW that although the 200 Zimbabwean women trafficked to Kuwait in March were still stranded there, a message had been sent to President Robert Mugabe's government.
Earlier on, the government had said they didn't have money. Maybe they had not seen the seriousness and the gravity of this issue. But I think now they've realized that they've woken up to it, and I think they are up to it at the moment. But we'll still do our part. We'll keep on pushing. We'll keep on making noise until the girls, all of them, those who want to come back, are brought back. And until also those who have come back have managed to get psychosocial support and also economic support.
President Mugabe's government originally claimed that because the country is bankrupt, there was no money to pay for the flights. MP Nyamupinga, who is a senior member of the ruling ZANU-PF party, says the government has now been assured by the International Organization for Migration in Zimbabwe that the United Nations agents had secured funds to repatriate the stranded Zimbabwean women. Paulina Mpariwa from the main opposition party, the Movement for Democratic Change, says that the Zimbabwean government was not serious when it said it did not have money to bring back the stranded women.
As women parliamentarians, we feel that if government is not doing enough, we'll continue sitting on the floor as a demonstration that we want our girls who are in Kuwait or anywhere else in the world where they are being held hostage, where they are being treated unhumanly.
On Tuesday, Zimbabwe's Foreign Affairs Ministry said it had written to the Kuwait government requesting a ban on the issuance of Article 20 visas to Zimbabweans. Harare said that would reduce the number of its citizens being taken to that Middle Eastern country on the promise of a job, only to end up being forced into prostitution.
Columbus Mavunga, and it's that time here on Africa Link when you get to sit down and enjoy, but also learn from the hard works of our crime fighters in this Learning by Air drama series.
Deutsche Welle, Learning by Ear. Listen up, shape your future.
Hello there. And welcome to Crime Fighters, Drugs to Cure, Drugs to Kill, by Mukoma Wangugi. This is the fifth episode, it all boils over. The name of the pharmacist Mary Jane came up during the investigations into Peter's death. But when the detectives went to interrogate her, all hell broke loose.
The gunfight at the pharmacy was unlike anything I'd ever experienced before. Our enemies had the element of surprise and the advantage of overwhelming firepower. If it weren't for Chokbank and Salamisha, I wouldn't have survived. When they dropped me off at Mary Jane's, they saw a van pull up, but didn't think much of it at first. It was only about a minute later that Chokbank remembered seeing the same van near Malinya's house. So they drove back and saved our lives. Chokbank was wounded, but Salamisha miraculously escaped. Amidst all the gunfire, I heard her fire three single-disciplined shots, and then all was quiet. She had killed them all. Meanwhile, Mary Jane had managed to call the ambulance from a hiding place in the back of the pharmacy.
Will Chokbank be okay?
We need to get him to hospital, right now.
I'm sorry.
Shh, don't talk. Save your strength. You're going to be okay.
Sorry. I have to go.
No.
I have to go now. You know how it is. This is to be.
No, my brother, please, just hold on. We knew by now that Peter's death was somehow connected to our country's wealthy, powerful and corrupt elite. With Chokbank wounded, Salamisha and I were the only ones left on the case. We wanted to continue my conversation with Mary Jane, which had been interrupted by the gunman. We were still at the pharmacy when my phone rang. I knew already what I was about to hear. Salamisha, that was the hospital. Chokbank is a...
He didn't make it.
No. Our brother is dead. My God. Those are words I never thought I'd have to say. My brother, our brother, is dead.
Oh, no. I'm so sorry.
No. I refuse to cry. I'll get revenge instead. Let's make Chokpan's death count for something, Kalumba. We'll get them all. Not just the assassin who pulled the trigger. We'll get the forces behind them too. From the one selling fake medicine in the street for 10 Ketagu shillings to the one living in a mansion on other people's false hopes.
You and I, Salamisha, we'll go wherever this case leads us. We'll see it through right to the end. It was time to take stock. This is what we had so far. Peter was dead. Our first lead in the case, Fuma, was dead too, and his assassins were killed in a shootout with Salamisha and Chokbank. Now my fellow detective Chokbank, who was like a brother to me, was dead as well. Everyone involved in the case was in some way suspicious. Baba Peter, the preacher man, Mary Jane, Dr. Kamkuta and his brother Malinya, the healer Lamatu, pretty much everyone we'd come across was potentially guilty. It was time to start thinking about who looked more guilty than the others. I wanted to get the people behind the people who killed Chokbank. Mary Jane was beautiful. She was obviously intelligent. But was she dangerous?
Okay, detectives. What do you want to know?
What did you mean when you said our lives are over? It's already true for Chokbank. He was like a brother to me and he's just been murdered by those beasts. I intend to get them, and in order to do that, I'll trample on anyone who stands in my way. Do you understand me?
The loss of your friend does not give you the right to threaten me. Do you understand me?
I just don't want you to have any illusions. You seem to be a straight-talking woman, Mary Jane, so I'm going to be perfectly straight with you. A young man is dead. The manner of his death suggests that the killer had some knowledge of medicine, in particular how to mix medicines in the right proportions and how to prepare cyanide capsules. You are a pharmacist and your name has come up in our investigation. So once again, what did you mean when you said I'd walk in a giant?
I meant that you have angered some very dangerous beasts. Beasts that are hungry for power and money. Peter did the same, and now he's dead.
So you knew Peter?
Yes, I did. I knew him very well. I prepared his prescriptions. But he was also my boyfriend.
So how come his parents knew nothing about you?
Why do you think? Which is harder to overcome in this country? Differences of ethnicity or of class? I've done well for myself, as you can see. But I come from a very poor village. They wouldn't have wanted their son to marry a village girl. To them, I was his plaything, not his girlfriend. He told them we'd broken up, but we were still seeing each other, secretly. You know what was worst of all? I couldn't even attend his funeral. I couldn't say goodbye to the love of my life.
Then you want justice too. Tell us everything you know and I'll make sure they pay for the suffering they've caused.
Revenge? No, that's not for me. If I help you, it will be so that others don't suffer as well.
That's good enough for me. Please, Mary Jane, start from the beginning.
You know about the drugs?
Which drugs?
Counterfeit medicines. All kinds. It's a multi-billion dollar industry all over the world, especially where people are poor and desperate. Do you know what they say? 10 Ketagu shillings from 1 million poor people makes 1 millionaire. Fake antibiotics, fake antivirals, cough syrups watered down so that they still taste like medicine.
Are you involved?
Do I look like I have a billion Ketagu shillings in my Swiss bank account? Besides, those fake drugs are bad for my pharmacy. What happened was this. I was approached by drug dealers and I turned them down. My mistake was telling Peter. He wanted to find out more. He said that with his money and power, he'd make sure they'd never bothered me again.
Do you have any leads for us? Where do we start?
Over 30% of the medicines sold in this country are fake. Most people don't even know you're supposed to have a prescription note from the doctor and that you need to take it to a licensed pharmacy. As for where they're coming from, for a supply like that, you'd have to look to the Ministry of Health. That much I know. And when you get there, start at the top.
You have a point. That amount of money certainly isn't ending up in the hands of the little people. It's the little people who are doing the dying.
Are we done? If that's it, all I can say is I hope I never have to see you again, not under this sort of circumstances.
I can assure you, madam, that the feeling is mutual.
Well, the only thing that will keep you safe from us is the truth. We are going to get the people behind Chokbank's death and Peter's.
A lot has been going on, but the detectives are staying focused. Join us again next time to find out where the story leads. You can listen to this episode again on our website, dw.com/crimefighters. And you can always visit us on Facebook. Bye for now.
And a quick recap of the main stories before we leave you. One of the girls kidnapped in Chibok, Nigeria 2 years ago has been found and reunited with her family. Supporters of Kenya's opposition court coalition party say they will continue their weekly protests until the Electoral Commission is disbanded. That's all we had time for. For any response, send us an email to feedback.africa@tw.com, a letter to AfricaLink DW 53110 Bonn, Germany, or you can send us a text message to country code 49160957595510. I am Abubakar Jallo in Bonn. Until tomorrow, have a good day. Bye now.